right, not right, not right, not right, got that right. Got that right.
But anyhow, it's a lesson that even though I'm out of here, that other people will see and know in this America how people live worse than in Ashanti.
You want to lose your home if you don't fight for it, you know? Like, a lot of people still misconcept, oh, nothing will happen, they're not going to get us out of here, they can't do that. Say, yes, they can. They can do whatever they want. They can send us a letter today and say, you know what, we want you out in 3 days. Ain't nothing we can't do. We got to fight for what is ours. We got that right. That's our right.
I had an old guy tell me straight to my face. He told me, I'd rather live on the streets than be in that Brooklyn shelter.
The foreclosure letter was posted all over the building, which created total panic. Everybody's panicking. Nobody knows what's going to go on, what's going to happen, where we're going to go. That's when we came together and said, we have to do something to stop this. Because if we don't, we may not be here.
I always wanted the house with a white picket fence. You know what I'm saying? Every little girl's dream of having a house like that. But originally when we bought it, it was a one bedroom, one bath townhouse in Tampa, Florida. But we remodeled and we added on a second bedroom. It became where I worked because I took care of children. So I had a daycare center. And it had a very big yard, like front, back, and side yard. So it was perfect. That was the house we were going to keep, you know, forever. I got diagnosed with cervical cancer 3 years ago. I was 27 when I got diagnosed. I was scared. I thought I was going to die. I mean, because you hear cancer and you're like, okay, that's it. You know, you're done. I was actually very lucky because I was in the middle stages and it hadn't gone to the last stage yet. So I was still able to, you know, not have a hysterectomy. And but it was really hard. I mean, I went through 2 years of chemo. It came to the point where I had to tell, I was licensed and I watched 5 kids and I had to tell the parents that I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't even take care of myself, let alone be responsible for somebody's child. It was very hard. We didn't have any kind of health insurance. And at that point when I lost that income and then my husband was having to take off 3 days a week to take me back and forth to the hospital because he's all I had, you know, that's when it started getting hard. And my husband was doing construction. So with all the foreclosures, people weren't building houses. So they said that they couldn't have him working anymore. That was it. I mean, we started to really go downhill from there. Bills started backing up and we couldn't afford to pay the mortgage. Some of it I don't remember. You know, I really don't because of the medication, but some of it I don't want to remember. I had a couple times where I tried to commit suicide. You know, it was too hard. And I know it was given a lot of stress on my husband, you know, going through that. And he just, you know, ignored it and stayed with me and stuck beside me. The sheriff's department came to the house with the mortgage company and they told us that we had 3 days and we had to leave. It bothered us a lot, you know, that we had to leave and we were leaving everything and that we had accomplished so much through the time that we were together to that point to just to lose it all. So we took everything out of the house and put it on the front yard and we sold everything we could and bought 2 bus tickets to come to New York. We stayed with his sister for about a month, and his sister lives in the project in housing, so she has a 2-bedroom apartment, and she's got 3 kids, and her husband, so it was really, really overcrowded, so that's when we decided, you know, look, we'll just go into the shelter system and try to do this on our own. We went and applied, and before we even applied, they were quick to say, okay, look, we'll just give you a bus ticket back to where you came from. And we were explaining to them, look, we just sold everything we had to get a bus ticket to come here. We don't want to go back. We don't have anything there. Our first placement was at the Washington Hotel, which was on 125th. And they placed us in this really tiny room with a twin-size bed. The mattress was disgusting. We sprayed Febreze. We bought bottles and bottles of Febreze and the flea and tick stuff just so if anything was alive on it to kill it. And my husband is, you know, 6 foot and he weighs 350. So he's kind of a big guy and I'm not a small girl. So he ended up having to sleep on the floor while I slept on the bed. I was really afraid for him because he was sleeping on the floor And there was rats like this. I mean, humongous rats just walking all over the place and they stay in the rooms and everywhere. It was disgusting. There was a lot of times that he wanted to detour the wrong way and just, you know, give up and, you know, start doing things he shouldn't be doing just to get money so that we can get, you know, somewhere to stay. And I really had to stay on him and, you know, tell him that, you know, we're going to make it, you know, things are going to happen and we're going to, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel. And finally, thank God we did. He's doing, you know, we're actually in a place now where we're back doing really good. Well, not really good because we're still in the shelter, but, you know, getting there.
The history of this building, 265 Hawthorne Street, goes way back. I moved in this building back in the late 60s. The landlord actually lost the building to someone who later tried to set the building on fire. We had a fire in 1986 where 23 families were left homeless, and I was one of them. I went to work that morning, and I went to work and I was late. 10 minutes, and my supervisor, she was standing in the middle of the floor, and I said, oh my God, I'm late, she's going to bother me this morning, I'm not in the mood. And she says, Evelyn, we have a call from your babysitter, there's a fire in your building. She said, I'll take care of everything, you can go home. And that was the longest ride, to Brooklyn. And when I got here, I stood in front of the building. I saw darkness. Everything inside was just pitch black. There was fire trucks everywhere, and there was water. There was soot. There was just everything. And I went in, went up the stairs, went up to my apartment, and my apartment was dry. And I said, thank God. When I came downstairs, there was this scrawny little boy, because he was very, very skinny, standing in front of the building, with his book bag, one of those heavy bags, on his back, pulling him back. And he was standing there looking up at the building. I walk over. He said, Mommy, I saw it on TV. So we get all the parents together, and we went to Flatbush. We fed the kids, bought all the flashlights that there was. When I came back, and every single thing in my apartment was destroyed. The dirty water from the fire went through my stuff, lost everything. Many people move away. I would not. I slept in a broken apartment here with my son. And when that became too bad to sleep in, I went to another one. And this lady from my church, she would come and she would give me a nice big thermos of hot water. And that is to help my son to change. So in the morning, in an off-broken-down apartment, I would have a towel around him or a thing, a blanket. She brought us so many blankets. And pride went out the window because we had nothing. And I would wrap my son halfway with the blanket and try to give him a little quick wipe because it was cold. It was during the winter. So I couldn't leave him completely unclothed. And then he goes to school. And we would eat either in the park, and then I found the library in New York Avenue had the space where we could do that. So I would take him there to do his homework, and he would do his homework, and I would have the food, and I would feed him. And one night, the lady smelled the food, and we got caught. And she came, and she says, somebody's eating here. There's food here. And my son had to say, my mommy's feeding me. We're homeless. Smack him. Shut up. But Mommy, we're homeless. And the lady looked at me and she said, what did you say, son? And let him speak. She told me, let him speak. He said, we're homeless. We had a fire. And she looked at me again and the tears just rolled down her face. She said, you're the lady I saw on TV. You're from Hawthorne Street. She said, oh my God, I feel so bad. And she took us into the little dining area where the workers would eat at the library. And she said, from now on, you come here, bring your son here, get his food, let him eat here. You go out and get his books and bring them in here. He could do his homework here, and you could eat there. That is a part of home, you know? You know your neighbors. You know, you feel if something is wrong, you're there to help share the pain. You may not have money to give, but that spiritual giving, feelings or whatever you want to call it, is there. And that's home.
That was Linda Contez and Evelyn Williams. My name is Michael Primo. Along with Rachel Falcone, I am creator and co-producer of the Housing is a Human Rights Storytelling Project. The project creates a space for people to share first-person stories about their struggle for home. More information, including how to participate, can be found online at housingisahumanright.org or by calling us toll-free at 888-955-6653. That's 888-955-6653.